Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Athletic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome to the show, brought to you by The Athletic UK. And today we're going to be discussing Fulham's triumphant visit up to Teesside as we came away from the Riverside Stadium with a massive 1-0 win. We already knew that promotion was pretty much in the bag, but surely now the title is getting closer after Bournemouth dropped yet more points, an 11-point gap at the top of the Championship. Dreamy days to be a supporter of Fulham Football Club. We'll look over that. We'll discuss Fabio Carvalho, who looks to be on his way to Liverpool. And also, there'll be a small brief this'll catch on at the end, as ever. And we're looking ahead to Sunday's game against Coventry, which is the day of our Fulhamish live podcast recording at the Half Moon in Putney. Cannot wait for that. And joining me, it's the regular Thursday club, Jack Collins. Hello.
Hello, listeners. How are we doing?
Fine, thank you. And Peter Rutzler, who I accosted on the train this morning from Middlesbrough to Darlington. I think he wanted to get on with trying to file an article, but I was badgering him for a natter. How are you doing?
Twice in one day is too much for me, Sammy. Too much for me. I need to recover.
I completely appreciate where you're coming from, Peter.
he was just like, we had to do a change at Darlington, and he was like, yeah, no, I'm gonna have to slink off and do some writing for the journey from Darlington to London. I was like, no, you don't. You just don't want to chat to me for 3 hours. So that's, but I totally understood.
Well, he knew he'd have to chat to you later as well. So, but like, this is just too much chatting with Sammy for anyone.
Using up all my Sammy reserves.
Yeah, exactly.
By the end of like the second hour, I'd just be playing him random songs. Like, what do you think of this chart, Peter? This one could catch on, couldn't it? Jack, before we do three-word reviews, I meant to say this on a recent podcast, but I forgot. The rules have changed regarding the horn. Any win between now and the end of the season is now horn-worthy. So, after last night, all aboard. I've lost the horn.
No, wait.
All aboard. Classic horn today after a brilliant win last night. The whites are going up. Are you okay with the rules changing? I just feel like three wins in a row, it was getting messy and difficult. Like,
I just feel like, Sammy, at this point, Fulham need two wins to go up, full stop. And that's if everyone wins every game towards the end of the season. I think it's just probably okay, mate. You'll be all right.
All right. I know people got annoyed with me earlier in the season when I played the
horn. Yeah, if we lose to Coventry at home now, I'm going to be angry. But alas, you know, you've brought that upon yourself. So you've got to take the consequences with your own actions.
Okay, I accept responsibility in advance. Jack, what were the best three-word reviews that came in?
Yeah, I enjoyed some of these. They're very good. Our old friend Richard Solbamba with champagne on fire, which I thought was very good. David Wellington, brilliant. Serbian salmon sores, just excellent. Londinium, yeah. Calling with Mitro's cream teas. Absolutely exceptional.
Oh, wonderful.
Really good, yeah. Rachel, at Rach Stevenshaw with On Borrowed Time. Very good. Very clever. Lovely. These are good this week, lads, ladies and gentlemen. It's very, very fun. Andrew Towner, Riverside, Fulham, Peerless. They're just great. Really enjoyed loads of them. Luke Resch with two wins away, but the open brackets with an A in the middle of them, which was remarkable. And then Matt Wall with a slightly NSFW, Teesside, wet ream.
Okay. I was about to say, wow, people have really taken it to a new level with the three-word reviews there. But
they were really clever, all of
Matt
them.
Matt brought down the tone just at the end.
I don't mind. It's still really clever. There were a lot of plays. I know it's obviously a lot of puns most of the time, but I really did think that maybe Middlesbrough kind of served up an opportunity to really work the puns. And look, Faithful didn't disappoint.
Peter, it was a big midweek trip for Fulham. Marcus Silva was saying in the build-up that he thought it was the toughest match of the season. I fully agreed with him. If there was a fixture difficulty rating like there is in the Premier League for the Championship, I think for me, Middlesbrough away would be definitely number one. Or if it was if there was a stroke index of Championship away grounds, again, I would put Middlesbrough at number one, considering their form at home has been exemplary this season, and they've been on very good form under Chris Wilder. So to go there, get a 1-0 win in the driving rain midweek, that is a performance of champions.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's the mark of champions. We've had a few of these now, haven't we, on the road, going away, not playing amazingly well, but still coming away with the 3 points. And it was interesting when you said that you thought it was the toughest game of the season, because obviously you think, oh, got Bournemouth coming up. It's funny. Is that a dig? But no, when you actually look at the details, and as you say, Sam, if you were to do a fixture rating, going to the Riverside is right up there. You know, they hadn't lost at home since November in the league, 8 wins in a row. Some big teams have gone there and lost. West Brom, Forest, Bournemouth. So to go there to fight, I think, is the best way of describing it. You know, Fulham had to fight and slug it out in the second half. To come away with a clean sheet, to come away with 3 points, it's a really, really, really sweet feeling, I think. And if anyone needed another sort of decisive moment to say going up, then I think you've had your fill now. I think you've had your fair share. But this was definitely up there. And sure, I mean, performance-wise, first half very good. Second half was the Middlesbrough I think we were sort of expecting, actually. I was a little taken aback by the fact that Middlesbrough didn't come at Fulham in the first period, didn't play. Not that Chris Wilder's teams are sides that will overly dominate you in that way. They tend to, looking at their score lines and speaking to a couple of people around the game, you know, they do sort of not grind results out, but they will do enough to get the win, and then they will make sure that they can hold on to it. But you know, they showed Fulham a lot of respect in the first half, and it was after the break when they switched up their wing backs and started to push on a lot more that we really got the full Middlesbrough experience. But you know, coming through that, a great win, a really good goal, another set piece goal making the difference. Mark of champions, Sam. I think you summed it up nicely.
Jack, it was a real battle in that first half, and I thought it worked for me, the pairing, certainly the first 45 of Harrison Reed and Nat Chalobah. Harrison Reed, just exemplary. That's the kind of game that he thrives in, really, isn't it? When he knows that there's a midfield battle to be won and there's scrappy balls and it's raining, that's when Harrison Reed comes alive. For me,
yeah, absolutely. Look, he loves this kind of battle, this kind of attritional game, if you will, and the ability to kind of, you know, duck and dive, to win balls back, to hassle and harry. It's all of the things in his game that we love watching. And this felt like the kind of game where he was allowed to do those things. Now, that's probably a little bit limited in terms of, I think Harrison Reed offers far more than all of those things put together, and it would be unfair to pin him as just that player. But I think there is an element that he likes to roll up his sleeves and get into the thick of it when those occasions occur, and you get to see that kind of side of him unleashed. I think, you know, in the sunshine on a glorious cottage pitch where Fulham are, you know, stroking the ball around beautifully against lower half opposition, you see a different Harrison Reed. And, you know, that's not to say one is better than the other. They're just different players in that he is then able to mix it up in the middle and press high and do all of the things that we love watching him do at home. But these are the kind of games you can show those kind of versatilities, those abilities to move around and kind of adapt to the situation. And I think that a lot of people like watching Harrison Reed in this exact mode, and that's why it was so enjoyable last night to watch him get mad at the match.
Peter, you wrote your article after the game on Harrison Reed, the title, Harrison Reed embodies Fulham's drive to become champions. You can read that right now on The Athletic by subscribing theathletic.com/Fulham Pod if you'd like to get 33% off your regular subscription. And yeah, he was everywhere last night, and possibly there should have been a red card for one of the challenges against him in the first half, which then brought bemusement from the Borough fans because he was rolling around in agony. Then suddenly Fulham had a counter-attack, and then he miraculously got to his feet, did a driving run down the right-hand side and nearly assisted an opener for Mitrovic.
Yeah, you could understand the anger, but then when you do see the replay, it was a pretty nasty challenge, as you were saying, Sammy. I think Matt Crooks and Johnny Howson were very, very physical in that middle area, weren't they? And that's why you needed Reed. And I think Jack sort of touched on it there. You know, there are different sides to Harrison Reed. We've talked about how his role sort of changed this year, the fact that he's playing as an eight at times and having to run vertically as well as horizontally in front of the back four. And just these last two games since the international break, QPR, where he's back in that number six role away from home, he's having to sort of mop everything up behind Fabio Carvalho and Tom Kearney, two of your classic sort of number 10s, want to be in the final third. And then a completely different job at Middlesbrough, back in that eight role where he is playing in an advanced position. He is running in behind when he can. He's trying to link with Harry Wilson, with Mitrovic, as well as supporting Nat Chalobah in that. He was playing as a six on Wednesday night. And it's just, though, he brings that tenacity, that energy and that pressure. And with a game like last night, you needed that bite, you needed that fight. And he does embody that. And he sort of embodies that kind of result, which Fulham have also sort of developed. You know, we sort of touched on it at the start of the pod, but you know, they are picking up these 1-0 wins on the road where, you know what, they're not at their best for 90 minutes, but they've got those sort of traits, that grit, that sort of resilience to come through it, to come away with it with a 1-0, to hold a 1-0, to keep a clean sheet. And it's through players like Reed who embody those characteristics. And I do also want to say that I thought Nat Chalobah was very good as well. In that six. Really tough battling there. I thought he screened Tosin and Tim Ream. Again, both of them were immense as well. You could see what, I think there was a lot of conversation about whether Chalobah should start, whether Seri should come on during the game. But I think as it sort of developed and as it panned out, you could see the value he brought to the game, just in his ability to deal with the physicality, because the referee wasn't giving very much, if anything at all. So you needed that bite in midfield and Reed and Chalobah sort of epitomise that.
Yeah, I thought Chalobah was good in the first half. I thought it was the right time to bring him off. Felt like he was waning a bit and a few passes were going astray and stuff. And I thought the Josh Onuma sub worked. I enjoyed, by the way, Peter, that the first comment on your Harrison Reed article is from someone called Lou. And quite simply, she says, long-time Reed supporter. This article is on point. So,
long-time Reed supporter. She's moved around.
She's gone from Southampton.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We signed on loan from Southampton originally before making it a permanent deal. Had also spent time with the Blackburn fans and the Norwich fans as well before, so.
Just like some people support Messi, some people support Ronaldo, some people support Harrison Reed.
Fair play to them.
Yeah. Jack, second half was a real struggle at first. There was a point about 60 minutes, and maybe this wasn't quite as easy to tell on the telly, but it was absolutely teeming it down. Like the rain was falling. Middlesbrough had what felt like about a dozen corners in 5 minutes. Both sides of the ground were buzzing. The atmosphere was loud. I was absolutely adamant that Borough were going to score. It just felt inevitable. But then shortly after, made a couple of changes. On came Josh Onuma. On came Niskins-Cabano. And then the match just slightly flipped back in our direction, which obviously is what led to the goal.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something here in that Marco Silva has been proactive there and made changes. And look, we talked about proactivity and reactivity loads last year. We've done it less this year because the truth is we've been in control of most games, and therefore we've been able to kind of just roll with it, if you will, as opposed to what we saw maybe in that first season in the Championship under Scott Parker, where we bemoaned that kind of lack of proactivity and maybe a bit then last year as well. This year we haven't needed it as much because the truth is we haven't really been behind that many times. And when we have, you know, he has made changes to try and rectify the situation. But it was just a mark of good management for me. I thought it was the right time to make those changes. We've seen this, you know, kind of regularly recently. I think the changes have been, we haven't had many people been like, those changes are wrong. That's not the change I would have made, which is something that kind of has plagued us in times gone by. You know, we have plenty of messages, plenty of emails from people being like, why did they do that? Why did Parker do this? We haven't had many being like, why did Silva bring this player on? And I think that's probably a mark that, you know, it's not to say that people know best, because I don't think that's true. And, you know, people, managers are paid to be managers and be in those positions for a genuine reason. But it does feel like Fulham are, he's making the substitutions that feel sensible in some ways. And this was another one of them that therefore flipped the game on its head. It's easy to say at the end of the game, if Josh Onuma had given away a penalty and we'd lost 1-0, then maybe people would be questioning it. But, you know, ultimately, I thought he came on and did well. We lost a bit of control, I thought, when Onuma came on, but there is an element of that we kind of needed in order to kind of chaos the game up to score the goal. So, you know, it's risk and reward. We took a risk. We could have been punished for it. Instead, we took that reward, took 3 points, and off we go home. Everyone's a happy bunny.
Yeah, I thought that Josh came on, did a solid job. I saw a little bit of criticism on last night on Twitter saying they didn't think he was that effective, but something for me, maybe it was being in the ground, I felt like he came on and changed the impetus of the game. I'm sure the stats maybe weren't that impressive. He didn't get that many touches on the ball, but they just felt like he brought some positivity to the match. He took a few risks. I thought he was tidy on the ball, and it was nice to see Josh back playing football. I think we all know that he's pretty effective at this level, at the least. Anyone that scores that goal against Cardiff, still, in my eyes, has more than enough.
Maradona.
Yeah, has more than enough credit in the bank to put in performances on the pitch for Fulham. Let's come on to the goal, Peter. Another set piece beauty from the away end. I couldn't understand in real time how Alexander Mitrovic had the penalty box to himself to head that in. Obviously, you watch the replay and you realise that it's quite a choreographed move. They think that Harrison Reed's going to take the free kick, and it really does surprise the Borough defence when he doesn't. But what a header. He leaps so high. I'd love some sort of match of the day graphic to try and work out exactly how far he got off the ground. I'm sure somewhere it's possible for someone to do that. But yeah, he leapt like a salmon, didn't he? As per one of the three-word reviews.
He did. He got some real height on that leap. It was a really difficult technique for the header as well, because it's almost like he's stretching for it. And obviously the ball is moving very quickly. You know, and it's not a full glancing header, is it? It's not like he's just sort of skimmed it a tiny bit to redirect it. There is a significant deviation on the ball from Wilson's free kick. But as you say, Sammy, gets up well, directs it perfectly into the corner. A lot of that is to do with the whip that Harry Wilson puts on it. I still don't think we've seen the best of Harry Wilson's free kicks this year. I mean, he had another one from shooting range that hit the wall. So he's still to register on that front in terms of direct goal scoring. But in terms of the delivery, we have seen that a few times this season. And it does make the difference. And it's why Fulham's set play return this year has been so impressive. I think it's 26, 25 goals from set plays, including penalties now.
Good Lord.
Six of those are pens, but it's still well clear at the top of the championship. And they're key goals as well, aren't they? You know, some of them have started, are the first ones in games, like the Forest away. And then other ones are in those 1-0s, you know, Cardiff, that was a corner routine. Barrow last night was another one. And, you know, that sort of cutting edge, really makes a difference. We've talked about having so many options, so many different ways of playing, different things you can fall back on to find a way through a team that's proving difficult, or you're not at your best and you want to find a way to go, and Fulham have that. And they work on these set plays, you know, they work on them a lot. They focus really on the detail of it, on the routine. It can be really tedious for players. You know, you speak to players about working on set play routines and their walkthroughs, and they can be slow. And if you're not really involved, it's hard to stay engaged. But clearly Fulham are bought into it. Clearly Fulham are bought into how they work on them on the training ground. They're listening, they're applying it, and they believe that it's going to make a difference. And that you know, Fulham don't historically have a good record from set plays, as you'll know. And to really write that, to really put that to bed has been impressive. And for Silva himself, as we've talked about before, you know, thinking back to his time at Everton and whatever, but it's a real asset. And again, it proved the difference last night.
Yeah, and 15 assists now for the season for Harry Wilson. I did a brief look back at recent championship seasons to find out kind of what is generally the high number for assists. Matias Pereira, a couple of seasons ago, got 17 for West Brom. Matt Ritchie got 17 for Bournemouth back in the 13-14 season. So a couple more assists for Harry Wilson, and he'll certainly be in the higher echelons of most assists in a championship season. I didn't go much further back than about 2013 was my research. So I don't know if there is some Guy Whittingham-esque person that got 30 in a season or something. I'm sure someone listening will be happy to go back through the stats and find out who the top ever assist was. It would be quite something if Mitrovic breaks Guy Whittingham's record and then Harry Wilson can break some sort of all-time assisting record as well, and he can get a nice little trophy as well at the end of the season. And then Jack, once we were 1-0 up, Borough threw the kitchen sink at us, and it's quite surprising that they didn't find the back of the net. Two or three absolutely gilt-edge chances. Towards, I remember the one that was missed in the 94th minute where he blazed it over. I was just like, this is our night, isn't it? If you're going to miss chances like that, then actually the stars were shining on us last night. It was a great performance. We dug in, but also some woeful finishing.
Oh, yeah, it was the header from Coburn for me. As soon as the header from Coburn went wide of the post, I was like, that's it, we've won this. Like, and then obviously the Watmore chance comes up, and I was like, oh. But I do think if you glance that header wide from the distance that he is from the goal, and it's such an inviting cross, you're never going to score. And ultimately, that's what it came down to. Look, Fulham defended well, right? Despite a couple of nervy moments from Marek Rodak, a couple of punches that had my dad and my uncle's WhatsApp group going absolutely mad. But there was a couple of moments. I do think that it was, you know, ultimately about half, well, no, actually, I think about 70% Fulham good defending, 30% Middlesbrough being a little bit wasteful. And look, they're a very, very good side, right? Like, let's not forget this. It's easy to sit here and be like, oh, we missed it and we should have beaten them. But ultimately, and Fulham should look at every game as winnable, right? We're top of the championship for a reason. We are the best side in this division. But that doesn't mean that every game is going to be won. And going up to Borough, as you know, as Silva said, as you know, as you said already, looked like one of the most complicated and most difficult fixtures in the calendar. So it proved. We got away with on a little bit with some of their wayward finishing, but you could equally point out that I'm still unsure how Bobby Reid didn't score when he connected with that chance. And, you know, Mitrovic rolls one wide as well. There's a couple of opportunities for Fulham to put this, you know, away in the first half, to be perfectly honest, where Middlesbrough didn't really have that kind of control of the game. So you look at it like that and maybe it could be different, and it could be different the other way as well. Fulham could have been 2-0 at halftime, and I don't think Borough would have got back into it. But as it was, yes, 1-0. There's a couple of missed chances at the end. They will be ruining those on another night. They might have scored them and we'll be looking at this differently, but you take it and you run.
I enjoyed, on a related note, a question to Chris Wilder last night in one of his post-match press conferences, which was, do you think there's any reason why you haven't beaten any London clubs in the league this season? Which Wilder responded, I didn't think when our centre forward missed one from 6 yards out, he went, oh no, that's a London club, I better knock that one wide.
It was an enjoyable interview. He was a bit salty at one point.
No, but if you're going to ask Chris Wilder a question like that, I mean, it's
no, not on that answer.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's completely fine.
No, but he did it after. It was like everything that followed suddenly fell into.
Yeah, there was a bit of it, but I thought actually, in general, he was quite gracious in defeat, and he blamed his own. He was like, look, we missed loads of chances, and that's the only thing that can be blamed, really, isn't it? And I thought that was probably fair enough.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think he's always fairly good value, but if you're going to ask him a stupid question like that, you will definitely get a cutting response from Chris. And I just wanted to give a shout out to the fans last night. I genuinely thought the away end was very, very good. The Middlesbrough fans are loud. It is a loud stadium. They have that kind of European style ultras drumming section that a few northern teams and Crystal Palace seem to have adopted. Not necessarily
and Crystal Palace. Just like how you've gone, oh yeah, Huddersfield, everyone, Middlesbrough, oh, and Palace.
Yeah, not for me, Clive, but they did make a racket. Felt like the Fulham fans, long way on a Wednesday night, had to up the volume a little bit and rise to the occasion. And we very much did. Obviously, scoring a 75th minute winner to send us 11 points clear at the top does help things. But yeah, I thought that we generated a good atmosphere last night. There was a particularly nice moment at the end where we sung the We've Got Marco Silva song at Marco Silva, and Marco Silva was lapping it up. He was absolutely loving it. He kept turning around to applaud the Fulham fans for that. I think something about it just particularly touched him. He looks like he's having a very nice time at the moment, Pete, doesn't he, Marco Silva? I think he's drinking it in and enjoying the moment.
Yeah, no, he is. You're sort of getting that vibe a little bit from his press conferences as well. As I think the closer you get to, I mean, the position Fulham are in, I mean, if you're not starting to enjoy it a little bit now, where the pressure is starting to come off a bit, you know, last night he was very, 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 very pleased with the result. And yeah, as you say, Sam, you could see that at full time.
Yeah, lovely to see Marco with a smile on his face and enjoying the celebration of the Fulham fans. It was a really special moment, actually, after the game. Just before we finish part one, by the way, on Sunday, there is a walk from Carl Shorten Athletic Football Club to Fulham starting at 10 a.m. It's called the Walk for Paul, and it's a walk in memory of the late Paul Parrish, who passed away at the Blackpool game. We spoke to his lovely daughter, Claire, on the podcast a few weeks ago, all about her Heart Safe initiative. And the walk is looking to not just remember Paul, but also raise awareness of how to spot the signs of a cardiac arrest and things like defibrillator awareness. And it's just going to be a really nice event. It's open to all, starts at 10, arrives at 2, starts on Carl Shorten Athletic Football Club. And if you want any more details, you can find Claire on Twitter at Little Claire Pom. They're doing stops along the way as well, so you might be able to join it halfway if that's slightly more convenient for where you live in Southwest London. You don't need a ticket or anything else like that. Just go along and meet some fellow Fulham fans, have a bit of a natter, and hopefully something lovely in Paul's memory and raising awareness for a very important cause, as we heard a couple of weeks ago. Right, in part two, we're going to discuss Fabio Carvalho and look ahead to that Coventry game. This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources, but therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Part two of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy James here with Jack Collins.
Hello, listeners.
And Peter Rutzler.
Hello.
Okay, so we're going to look ahead to Coventry in a moment. But what I felt like we didn't need today, Peter, was more Fulham news. But it broke this afternoon, first via Fabrizio Romano, aka the man that says, here we go, and announces transfers on Twitter, that Fabio Carvalho has signed a deal with Liverpool. Since then, The Athletic has now run this story as well, and it's going to happen in the summer, pretty much for the same transfer terms that was agreed in January before the deal fell through. I knew that this might be on the cards, Peter, but I thought there was a chance that Fabio and his team might want it to go to some sort of European bidding war in the summer. Turns out that they've cashed the chips in early, and Liverpool is where he's going.
Yes, yes, it is. You know, as you said, Fabrizio Romano with the story earlier on, and we've been able to confirm that as well. We talked about it before at the time, didn't we, that maybe there was a European angle there. You know, maybe it would be looking broadly because he wants to play. You know, that's the sense since we got back in. And yeah, as it's turned out, you know, Liverpool have been able to ensure that they've not lost him. I think that's what it looks like from their perspective. As you say, Sammy, the deal is very similar to what was agreed in January. £5 million up front, I believe, with add-ons, and then a 20% sell-on as well. I think in those circumstances, considering where we're at now with Carvalho, I think from a Fulham perspective, that's a good deal compared to letting him go and waiting for the compensation. Of course, we can all see his talent, and if he was under contract for a bit longer, I'm sure you're looking at much, much more for a player whose ceiling seems to be extremely, extremely high. But as it is, it's Liverpool will be his next steps. I think it's a good place. Obviously, Harvey Elliott was in a same age group; they played together at Fulham in the youth group, youth age groups. There'll be a Motspur Park tinge to the future of life at Anfield now. But yeah, it's. I guess from one perspective, it's good the saga's over. I think it's credit to Carvalho that it hasn't really affected him for much of this season. I think that in recent weeks, his performances haven't hit the same heights, but we also have to consider that he is targeted in most games. And I think even last night, we saw a bit of that. We saw that against QPR as well, where he is having to learn to ride challenges to avoid getting himself hurt. But has remained a key fixture in this team, has remained an essential part of what Marco Silva wants to do. And there's no doubting his talent. There's no doubting what the Fulham coaching staff think of him. And clearly now a club like Liverpool see a future for him there. And that deal's done. So I guess the next question for Fulham is, how do they replace him?
Yeah, I mean, it's a testament to Fabio Carvalho that him not hitting the heights is getting an assist against QPR and winning the free kick that leads to the Fulham goal. But I think you're right. It's just a mark of how important he has been to this team this season, Peter. And what we've witnessed for a season has been wonderful. It's sad that it's not going to be any longer. And Jack, it's been ruled out that he will return to us on loan, I think.
Well, at least not. Immediate, like, as it's not part of the deal, I think.
Yes,
kind of ruling out, which is probably you'd expect it to have been if it was going to be that.
I am a bit sad. I kind of maybe naively thought that that could be on the cards. I really thought he'd be a useful player for us in the Premier League next year, some continuity if Liverpool allowed it to happen. But looks like Liverpool have alternative ideas. Do you think that's potential, like being around the first team next year?
Yeah, I do. I actually have a theory about this, that Klopp has finished his cycle almost with his three big guns. And while we've seen the introduction of Luis Diaz, of Diogo Jota, of Harvey Elliott a lot this season as well, before that injury, obviously. And I think part of it is that Klopp knows that it's very much adapt or die. And I think in that regard, he might have to look at switching formations. And if he does so at the moment, he doesn't have a player who naturally fits into that 10 role. We've seen them deployed as a four, Jota, Firmino, Mane and Salah as well at times, where one of them's had to play in a kind of slightly uncomfortable 10 role. Bobby Firmino's okay there, but I don't think it's probably his best position. And I do think that as they start to, not necessarily age, I don't think it's necessary about their ages in particular. I think the key element here is that not necessarily teams in the Premier League, but teams across Europe might eventually start to, you know, work that out. They need to freshen things up. Sir Alex Ferguson famously said you can't do more than 5 years with the same squad. You have to keep freshening it up. And I think that's maybe why Klopp's got one eye here, or Liverpool maybe, even thinking post-Klopp, have an eye here on switching formations, on being able to change shape during games. And I do think that that's why Fabio has been brought in, because they don't have a natural 10 to jump into that slot. And I do wonder if it's a kind of harbinger of get him in and around the squad. That doesn't mean I think he's going to play loads of minutes next year. I don't. But I think if you get him in and around the squad and kind of let him develop in those places, it'll allow them to look at what the future looks like. And how you do start to replace a forward line of that caliber is a very difficult task. It's not necessarily a like-for-like player that comes in and does the same thing. You might have to completely switch your attacking impetus. And I think that's maybe why they're thinking about bringing Carvalho in and putting him straight into this first team.
And Peter, you mentioned how do Fulham replace him. Fulham will almost certainly have been looking at the transfer market for being in the Premier League for a couple of months now, you'd have thought. I think that the transfer team probably have been saying when, not if, for some time now. And that is a big hole in the squad. We lost Carvalho for about 2 or 3 months of the season, kind of September, October. He wasn't there. And after a while, we didn't miss him, but we did at first. Bobby Reed kind of fitted in the 10 and did an admirable job, so much so that actually I remember a few times we said, will Fabio get his place back, because Bobby was doing such a job. But after a while, Fabio proved his worth in that role, and clearly the evidence has shown that he's absolutely thrived since coming back from that never-ending toe injury that he got back in August. That's a bit of a throwback to earlier in the season. So how do you think Fulham will try and approach this in the transfer market? Do you think this could be the start of a transition in shape for Marco Silva as he goes up and plays much tougher opposition next year in the Prem?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. They've certainly been, will have start work now already, with contingencies, as they do anyway, it's just part of due diligence. But I think a lot of it, as you say, will be to do with how Fulham want to play next season. And I think that's a really interesting element to this. This is more my opinion, as is just looking back over Silva's different teams. I wouldn't be surprised if Fulham switched to a three at some point next season. That, of course, will depend on personnel, who they have in. And I'm sure they'll want to bolster centre-half anyway. Yeah, interesting. And then also, what kind of profile of midfielders does he want? Now, a lot of Silva's teams have always had goal-scoring tens, or tens that can go beyond the front man and affect games in those areas, playing sometimes as an eight, as we've seen Fabio do, but just stepping into advanced positions. Will Fulham be able to get a player of the talent to be as effective in the Premier League in that role next year? Because obviously the gap that Fulham have got to step up now is huge, and it will be interesting to see what they do. And I'm sure, of course, you want a player like Fabio Carvalho. I mean, we've talked about him so much, but he's a naturally gifted player, someone who works really hard as well off the ball, has a fantastic mentality, which has been underlined by how, you know, the last few months he's just not been that affected, or his football hasn't been too affected by what's been going on around him. Finding a player like that will be very, very difficult. Bobby Decker-Dovarid, as you said, has stepped into that position. Tom Kearney's a different player. It will be a case of what Silva wants to do in terms of how the team sets up. I can't see Fulham overly changing to where they are now. I still think we'll see the system that we see now. But the Premier League is a different beast. It is certainly going to throw up some new challenges, and it certainly won't be an easy task. To find the right player. He's got to adapt to the Premier League, got to adapt to the intensity, and play in a team that's not going to be as dominant next year. It's going to be a different environment. So, a very intriguing question, because a goal scoring 10 is very different, as Jack will probably outline, to a 10 that's, you know, creative and likes to pop around and pop into pockets. Because Carvalho was much more than that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually kind of echo Peter's thoughts in some ways about the fact that I wonder if it not were a drop into a three in the back, I wonder if Fulham's defensive or midfield line is a little bit more defensive next year, in that three, rather than a 4-2-3-1, it's a 4-3-3 shape with two eights to break on as opposed to an actual pure 10 to give us a little bit more stability in transition. I've already talked about the fact that I think that when you look at what he's trying to do with Reed and Chalobah, I think that's because he sees that as a defensively minded pairing that you could maybe play alongside a Tom Kearney next season, you know, or a player of Tom Kearney's kind of mold next season, in order to make sure that Fulham are a little bit more defensively rigid than we have been this season. There's a couple of players that I would be looking at. I know that Leeds United have been linked already with Brendan Aaronson at Salzburg. I'd be very intrigued to see if we could have a conversation about that. The other one that I quite like is Andreas Skov-Olsen, who can kind of play on either wing, but I have quite liked him through the middle as well. He plays for Club Bruges. Obviously, we've got some sort of relationship with them after the Dennis Adoy deal. And maybe Dennis can have a word for us. But I do quite like him as well. He left Bologna a couple of years back. Never really got going there. But he didn't really work. But I do think he might be an interesting prospect at this point. Aside from that, I think Marco Silva will have some pretty heavy links in Portugal. And one that jumps out to me, might play wide, but could play as a 10, is Rafa Silva. Unhappy at Benfica, been very, very impressive for them over the years. But rumours are that he wants to leave and try his hand in the Premier League. There will be bigger clubs than Fulham involved. But I wonder if the kind of Benfica links that we've really talked about in the back room and that Portuguese backroom staff might have a say in this. If Rafa Silva wants to come to England, then Marco Silva might be able to pull a couple of strings. That'd be one for me that I think would be, you know, a little bit experience at the very top level. We saw him playing this week, obviously, against Liverpool, but was exquisite against Ajax in the last round of the Champions League. If he wants to try something new, then maybe we could tempt him to the cottage.
Peter, I'm going to preempt a question that is almost certainly going to come into the Fulhamish inbox if we did open it up, which is, if Fulham wrap up the league with, let's say, a few games to go, it seems likely given our position in the table, do you think Fabio Carvalho might not play anymore? Maybe we could see Sonny Hilton. A lot of people would love to see him come and fill the boots of Fabio Carvalho for the last two or three games of the season. If we know for a fact, and it is pretty much a fact now, that Fabio is not here next year and it's signed, sealed and delivered.
I'm not sure. I'd be like, I guess it's not the same thing, but it's like Fulham secured the, you know, the title, and you say, well, does Rodrigo Muniz now get some more minutes ahead of Mitrovic, even though he's got his goal record in mind? I don't think Silva will rotate overly. I think we've seen that really all season, and I think he will want, and I think the team will want, to win as many of these remaining games as possible.
Oh, I think they'll be looking at that 100-point mark.
Yeah,
I think, why not?
They will want to keep up those standards that they've set. I think that's been one of the driving forces of this whole season. And you know, and Carvalho's been central to that. And you know, Carvalho's been excellent too. And I'm sure he'll want to keep playing. You know, he has not been or seemed like a player that had his head turned and doesn't want to be there. It's not been the case at all. I think everyone who's seen him play could see how much he's giving, the risks he's taking with the challenges he's facing and whatever else. So no, I can't see that happening. It reminds me of the end of last season where Scott Parker said we might need to start using some of these players, and we got sort of a half and half mix that didn't really sort of work. I don't think that'll be the case. I think Fulham will go strong until the end, and then it'll be a reset in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, for some of us who our main ambition now for the rest of the season is to reach 100 goals, I really hope that Marco Silva takes the challenge seriously and plays his strongest 11 until that's achieved. Once he has 100 goals, you play who you want.
No, 100 goals, 100 points. I think, here's one for you. If Fulham get 100 goals and 100 points, I think this is the greatest side in Championship history. If we don't, then I think there's arguments to be had elsewhere.
In terms of just Championship, as if we're going with that flimsy when they change the name and put a different colour scheme over it, yeah. definitely got to be up there, surely.
But what were Reading's points total? It was
106,
wasn't it?
But yeah, they've got 99 goals though.
Yeah, but I think you have to break both. But if you're going to be considered the outright best side in Championship history, I think you have to break both.
There is one other thing, and that's best goal difference. So Fulham's goal difference is plus 61. The best in the second tier is plus 74.
And that was set in 1895 to 96. So if you're beating that, I think you're right up there.
Right. Good shout. Let's do that as well.
Stat of the day badge for Peter Rutzler. Finally, in this section, wanted to look at Coventry on Sunday, 3 p.m. kickoff. Bit weird that we're playing Sunday 3 p.m. even though it's not on the telly. It's a sellout Jack at Craven Cottage. We're back at Craven Cottage, 5 away days in a row. The marathon is finally over, and it'll be nice to be there. Of course, there is some mathematics that Fulham could get promoted on Sunday. Forest have to lose to Birmingham, and then Fulham would have to beat Coventry in order for us to get promoted on Sunday. Not going to happen, but could. But yeah, Jack, Coventry aside, that we did not enjoy playing earlier in the season. A 4-1 defeat. They very much had our number that day. I think Coventry at home, though, is not quite the same test as Coventry away, but they've done very well this season. They do have to be respected.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. It's, you know, they have been much better at home, and that's fair enough. And they've also fallen off a little bit of late. I think it's partly just having a slightly small squad for what Mark Robinson's been trying to do, but full credit to them. I think if you'd offered them, you know, where they were, or where they are now at the start of the season, they would have bitten your hand off for it. So full credit to Coventry. They've been exceptional. They've been a real, you know, cut and thrust in this division, I think. And it's easy to come up and kind of just sort of wander around at the bottom, right? And try and defend your way to 17th. They've come out swashbuckling, they've come out fighting. It's been really, really intriguing. And you know what, fair play to them. They need to be given the utmost respect, because they have been a real joy to behold for long parts of this season.
I mean, they're not immune to an away win. They did win 2-1 at Bristol City in February. They got a win at Reading in February as well. They also went to Peterborough and won in January. So there might be a consensus that they're only a home team. They're very much not. Peter, though, it will just be good for Fulham to get back to Craven Cottage. I imagine for you're probably pretty weary of trains and cars after 5 away games in a row. So it will just be nice, even if it's not the game that secures promotion, for Fulham to be back in front of their home fans. It's felt like a long time.
Yes, it's good for me. Good for me specifically. yeah, no, it's it will be good. Marco Silva made that comment as well afterwards. It's a lot of travelling. It's a lot of hotels for the players. So to get back in front of the home crowd and just to see the team over the line. And I think that would be a real nice symmetry to winning it against Coventry, considering how terrible the result and the performance was all the way back in October, that sort of decisive moment, really. One of those real standout moments in the season where I think that was probably the moment where we asked the most questions about the team, that where alarm bells really were ringing the loudest, I think. At any stage, and the way the team have come back, the different elements to their game that they've added, the resilience, the ability to react in adversity, to grinding out results when you're not playing particularly well, it was quite an important moment. So to do it against Coventry, I mean, as you know, with Forest Birmingham, it seems very unlikely, but on the Saturday, you know, it would be a fitting finish. But as Jack outlined, you know, and as we know from seeing the way they play, you know, they do carry a great deal of threat. They work very, very hard as a unit. They went man to man against Fulham and matched them and outdid them at the Rico. And I'm sure that they'll cause problems again. They didn't make it easy for Forest last night. So you know, it should be a good game. And you know, whether or not they get promoted, it will be nice to be back. Back by the Thames, back by the river, back where we want to be.
Yeah, the riverside will probably be completed now by the time we're back. It's been so long. You speak about Fulham's resilience, by the way. Saw a great tweet from Tristan Pocharicic, and I loved this stat. He said that this season there have been 4 1-0 wins away from home. Peterborough, Hull, Cardiff, Borough. The similarity? All won by a Mitrovic header.
Nice.
I liked the symmetry there. Also, I saw that if we win 3-0 on Sunday, then our home and away records will be exactly the same, both in terms of wins, draws, losses, goals scored, and goals against, if we win 3-0 on Sunday, sorry, I should say, which again, the level of consistency from this team is utterly remarkable. Just one thing, Jack, you were saying off air before we started that obviously everyone will be wanting Forest not to win on Saturday, so there's a hope that we can get promoted against Coventry.
Yeah, I'm not.
You've got a theory here. Do you want to present your theory to the class?
Well, Forest are 8 points behind Bournemouth, right? Which seems like a lot. But then I took a look at Bournemouth's run-in, and Bournemouth's run-in is horrendous. It is an absolute... let me put it this way. I would not be a happy boy if I was a Bournemouth fan. Let me read you out their run-in. They have Sheffield United. Then they have Middlesbrough. Then they have Coventry away. Then they have us. Then they have Swansea away, who are in flying form. Then they have Blackburn, who, to be fair, have been quite poor of late. Then they have Nottingham Forest. And then they have Millwall. Now, Forest obviously still have to play us as well. But if Bournemouth were to lose their next two games against Middlesbrough and Sheffield United, which is perfectly plausible, I don't think it's likely, but I think it's plausible considering they lost to West Brom in the week. Forest would be 2 points behind them if they win both of their games, which are on paper easier, with each other still to play. They've both also got to play Fulham in that time. I don't think this is implausible. My theory is that Forest come up second. That's my theory.
I mean, I'd part of me obviously really wants Fulham to just get this sorted and over the line, but for it to happen against Coventry. But if the trade off was Bournemouth to completely bottle it and being third,
I think the key is that it's worth pointing out here that actually, you know, for all the criticism that Scott Parker's got and for all the criticism he's got off Bournemouth fans as well, this was actually the period in the season that he had Fulham in the Championship, where he really did actually turn it around, and he really steadied the ship when it looked like we were going to fall out of the playoffs completely. We lost those two games. You remember coming back off the break to Brentford and to Leeds? And then it was like, oh God, Fulham aren't even going to get to playoffs. And then from there, it was very steady. And so he does have a track record of being able to see this out in the Championship when things got a bit rocky. But I did look at that. I did look at those games and go, whew. I would not want your... I was like, our running isn't easy, but my Lord, I would not want yours.
If Forest hadn't have started quite as catastrophically as they did, I'm pretty certain that they would be definitely in the top two shout and probably giving us a little bit more of a run for them for our money than Bournemouth are. They are absolutely flying at the moment. And yeah, I think promotion on Sunday does look unlikely, but you never know. Right, Peter, we're going to have to leave you there because your phone is buzzing. But thank you for your time today.
Oh, thank you for having me, Sammy. It's nice to see you. Again.
Yeah, that's again. That's quite enough Sammy time for Peter today.
Yeah, Peter needs to go have a Sammy break. That's why he won't do part three. And in part three, we're going to do some correspondence and then this will catch on. Part three of the Fulhamish podcast. Peter is gone. It's just me, Sammy, with Jack Collins. Hello.
Hello, mate. Hello. Just the two of us. It's old school, this.
Peter's a man in demand. He gave us two out of three parts.
And, there's a lot going on with the Fabio stuff, isn't there? So obviously he's gonna have to deal with all of that.
It was one of those that dropped earlier. I was like, oh, not today. There's enough going on. There's enough busy to talk about. There's so many like weeks with Fulham where there's like not a lot of news and we're having to like scrape the barrel sometimes of what to talk about. And then you're like, oh, you could have saved this for a nice quiet one in like May or June or something like that.
I'm sure when it gets announced, we'll do it again. But alas, here we are.
Yeah. Do this or catch on in a second, but a couple of bits of correspondence that have passed the desk, which I thought would be nice to do first. First, this one from Oliver Beals says, hi guys, I'm sure it hasn't escaped your notice that there's been much debate in division amongst the fan base following the scenes directly behind the goal after Mitro banged home the penalty against QPR on Saturday. Those of us who attend away games with our children or older relatives have been vocal on Twitter about our concerns that sooner or later someone is going to get seriously injured as a result of fans throwing themselves forward multiple rows to create limbs following goals. These concerns have been met with sneers and suggestions by some that maybe away games aren't for you or that we're simply moaning for the sake of it. I've got a 10 and 7-year-old. We regularly attend away games and are happy to stand throughout with my two boys standing on their seats, which they enjoy as part of the away atmosphere. atmosphere. If we'd have been unfortunate enough to be directly behind the goal on Saturday, though, they would have been both wiped out and very possibly seriously hurt. Why can't some supporters understand that no one is saying we shouldn't go mental celebrating goals, but simply ask that they consider those around them who run the real risk of being hurt, namely children and older fans? Kind regards from Ollie. Jack, this has been something that's happened on Twitter, and I feel like, just quickly at this point, important to just stress that, like, not everyone's on Twitter, right? So this has been something big on Twitter. And if you're on Fulham Twitter, you'll know about this. I imagine there is a lot of people that listen to this that wisely stay away from Twitter and therefore don't know that this is a conversation going on. I think there can always be a danger that you think that everyone's on Twitter or every Fulham fan is on there. And actually, it just feels that way because Twitter's so well designed to make you feel like the whole world is on there and chiming in. There has been a debate started by Dan Crawford from Hammy End after the pictures of Mitrovic's goal, as Ollie talked about. And Dan basically said the same things as Ollie, but in a very nice, erudite way, because Dan is very good with words. And I thought what he said was very true. Jack, I'll pass on to you on this one. I've got a few opinions as well that I didn't want to get involved on Twitter because I was like, I'll say something on Twitter and it will get taken out of context.
Well, this is exactly where I started with it. I didn't want to get involved with it on Twitter because it's the kind of thing that in 240 characters or less can be misconstrued, especially when something has caused such a divide, right? But first and foremost, it's probably worth pointing out that Dan Crawford's thread on this matter was polite, succinct, and full of good points. And if, you know, before we get into the actual thing, if you're the kind of person that if you decided to react to that by unloading a torrent of abuse towards him, then you're an atrocious human being. And there's no place for that in football, never mind at Fulham. But to go back to the matter in hand, I do think there's a lot to dissect in some ways. And I can see both sides of this argument, right? Football is supposed to be fun. Although with us, there's always a share of heartbreak and desolation in there as well. But it is supposed to be, you know, going with your mates and your family and celebrating like mad with your friends when losing it, when a last minute winner goes in, and loving life when you win, especially in the derby against, you know, that lot from up the road. Anyone who thinks that what Dan is saying is anti any of that has clearly never had any contact with Dan, because he's an inspiration in terms of the fervour of his support for this club. And look, we've all been involved in those kind of moments, right? I remember the rush in the old terrace of Griffin Park when TC saw the second on that fireworks night to seal the deal. And we ended up meters from where we stood, although, you know, admittedly that wasn't all standing terrace, so it was a little bit easier to get shifted around. You know, or the last minute Mitro goal at Preston where the stand was so steep and people were catching each other, or at Oakwell when there was that rush to the front to embrace K-Mac when that ball finally went into the net in the most frustrating game of all time. It happens, right? There's exuberance and overexcitement and pure oblivion, I think, at times. But then there's also a difference between that and like walking out onto the staircases in order to throw yourselves down them for a penalty, which Mitro was always going to score. Like, it all felt weirdly forced. But like, I think maybe part of this for me, and you know, to kind of come away from all of that, part of the buzz of an away day, right, is about being there with your own people behind enemy lines in hostile atmospheres. It's about being bound together by Fulham, no matter who you are, in somewhere where everyone else is kind of against you. And if you saw a Fulham supporter being beaten up by a QPR fan at the weekend, I'd probably try and step in, right? I might not be of much use, but I would try, because that's what it's about, isn't it? Like, looking after your own, being part of something, being part of a community. So if we try and step in, or if, you know, I can't speak for everyone, but I feel like that's how I would feel. And I'd say you're probably the same, Sam.
Yeah.
So, but if we'd step in to try and look after someone outside, why is it any sort of offense to suggest that we do the same inside? That we'd keep an eye out from each other, from the people around us, that we try and make sure they're able to enjoy it the same way as us, right? I think about it. QPR sold out when it was still in the allocations to season tickets with a relatively decent amount of membership points, right? So 99.9% of Fulham there were Fulham season ticket holders who go away at the very least semi-regularly. That's the community. That's supposed to be all of us together. You know, no matter, you know, who people are, that is the people who are regularly at these kind of occasions. So to say that some people shouldn't be there because of various reasons, having kids, being elderly, being disabled, is absolute nonsense, right? Like, my granddad got my dad and by proxy me into Fulham. And I hope that one day, a long way off, that if I'm blessed enough, that I could bring my children down with me and to away days to experience the same things that I got to do with my family. I hope that when my kids, you know, if I'm blessed with them, they grow up, they'll start going themselves like my brother and I did in our teenage years. And I'd do so and let them go with the hope that the Fulham community would keep an eye on them like they did with us. I hope my dad keeps coming with me until he can't anymore, right? I want to take him to games and have him there with me, and I want him to be there in away ends. And look, at the moment, my dad, I'm lucky enough that my dad is mobile and able to, you know, be wherever. And if it does get to a rush, he'd be all right. But, you know, he might not be in 5 years' time or in 10 years' time. And I think that, you know, although I'll be willing to be corrected about this, this kind of phenomenon has been born out of two things. One is the culture of kind of one-upmanship on social media, and two, the frustration of not being allowed to go and see Fulham for a season and a half, which are both fine in their own rights, or I think the former is probably slightly more grim than the latter. I saw a lot of responses to that Dan thread and to responses to it being like, this is why other fan bases think we're crap. And I thought that was interesting because genuinely, I couldn't give a monkey's what other clubs' fan bases are saying about how good our support is on Twitter. But I couldn't really care less what they think about us, because I know how much I love Fulham and how much this community has given me, and how much, you know, we know that when we're all together, it can be absolutely the best thing on earth. I care far more about how genuine supporters of this club feel about their own safety than what some Hull City fan thinks about our celebrations, because it goes straight back to the point about looking after our own. Obviously, no one's asking anyone to not have a quality time at football or not go mad or love life when Fulham score. That's what it's about. But I don't think it's too much to ask to suggest people keep an eye out for those around them as well. Football is everyone's game, whatever your age, gender, religion, race, ability, or orientation. Like, all that matters at Fulham on match day and those away ends or at home is that you're Fulham. And if we're all Fulham, why would we not look after our own?
Yeah, I think, I mean, brilliantly put, by the way. I'm not going to be able to add much more that you haven't said there, Jack, because you've summed it up perfectly. But also, like everything, there is a nuance to this debate. And I think it was important what you mentioned, few of the moments that I recall. And you have to take some things on a case-by-case basis. Sometimes things happen. And naturally, sometimes people might get injured at a football match celebrating goals. As you say, I remember the Preston one. It was so steep, and people were just falling over because people were just so excited and they tripped down the stairs. And
that's fine.
I remember Barnsley.
I'd rather it didn't. I'd rather people didn't get injured, but occasionally accidents happen. That is life. That's not about football. That's about life.
And like last night at Middlesbrough, if you really wanted to go and push you and your mates over at Middlesbrough because that's what you enjoy doing, there was more than enough space in the stand last night where you couldn't go do that and you'd be absolutely knowing nobody. And apart from injuring yourselves, like, it would be fine. But QPR is QPR, right? It's absolutely rammed in that lower tier. It felt like there was more fans in there than there were seats at points. And clearly what happened on those stairs was dangerous.
I don't think I've ever seen it like at QPR, because it did feel like everyone kind of went onto the stairs in order to kind of rush down them. But I suppose that's the kind of weird nature of the fact that it was a penalty.
Yeah.
You see last minute things where people have fallen over and whatever, and people have, you know, given it, you know, in bouncing around. Me and Tom have fallen over bouncing around before. This happens. Like, you know, sometimes you get caught, sometimes your leg gets caught. You know, those things can happen. But we're not chucking ourselves over a couple of rows in order to land on other people. And I do think that it's the kind of weird element of a penalty that makes this strange, right? Because it allows you to build up to the idea of the goal. And that's kind of maybe the difference here. If that goal is just a header from a cross, maybe the scenes aren't anywhere near the same, because people haven't got that opportunity to put themselves in a position where they can coordinate that kind of rush down them. But like, look, I've been to football matches all over the world. Right? I've been blessed enough to go to games. I've seen, you know, unbelievable scenes in the Stadio Olimpico recently where Lazio beat Roma. I've been in these ultras ends. I've been to the Derby in Belgrade. I've been to, you know, games, you know, everywhere in across the world. I've been to real ultra sections where people are genuinely terrifying, right? And there are crushes. There are things where people move as en masse. But there's never this kind of idea that you're trying to get to it. It's just the emotion of something. And I feel like by trying to kind of concoct those ideas, it just doesn't feel right for me. Like, that always bears out over natural bits and bobs. It is what it is. But that's my tuppence worth on the matter anyway. Like, obviously, no one's saying don't have fun. That'd be stupid. Obviously, everyone's had great fun at Fulham. It's the best thing in the world, following Fulham, and especially following Fulham away. But like, just keep an eye out for each other. Surely it's not that weird.
That's all it is for me, is I feel like people should be allowed to celebrate how they want, literally with the caveat, as long as it's not endangering someone else. That's pretty much the long and short of it. No doubt someone will clip this up and try and take it out of context.
fingers crossed that being on a podcast is slightly harder to do that. I also just did see a little bit. I really don't want, and it's a big thing in other fan bases where there is a young v old divide. I know it's the case up the road at Sanctions FC that the old fans hate the young fans and the young fans hate the old fans. And that's not something that I think is that apparent at Fulham right now. I think everyone kind of gets along, but there's been shades of that this year where there's been growing discontent, I think, from both sides. And I would really hate it if it got to that situation where there was real animosity on both sides. So fingers crossed.
I didn't feel like it was animosity. It was just people, you know, trying to defend their own viewpoints, right? Which is fine. But like that moment where it descended into genuine abuse, I think is ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Ollie, thank you for your message. I think, and also this is something that's been building all season as well. Like, I think some people were like, oh, why are we talking about this now? We just won 2-0 in the derby. It became because of the clip that happened. But also we've had similar kind of messages or comments from people all season. There was a little bit of this chat after the Bristol City Cup game where a photo went round of some of the lads who had fallen overseas. This is not something new. And I know the FST has had a lot of messages about it. So anyway, that's our 2 pence worth on it. Jack, are you ready for a This Will Catch On?
We'll change the mood up somewhat. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I know. There's no easy segue to go talking about limbs to This Will Catch On. So we're going to do a live This Will Catch On at the Half Moon on Sunday, which will then be released in next Wednesday's podcast. So I'm saving up a few of This Will Catch Ons for Sundays to be played live in front of a studio audience, which could be carnage. I don't know how that's going to go, but we shall see. If you want to get your entry in for the Half Moon, I'm still accepting submissions at hello@fulhamish.co.uk, but I do have a big backlog. I haven't really looked through them yet. So if you want to get it played in front of an audience, then get yours in pretty quickly. But this one today is from David Manning. And he said, here's a recording of a Sam Fender modern classic for This'll Catch On. I thought this one was particularly apt, Jack, as we were in the Northeast last night. I know it was Teesside, not Tyneside, but close enough as far as I'm concerned.
It'll do.
He says, apologies for it being so lengthy. It's a tribute to our starting 11. Excuse my singing and that I had to bring two parts of the song together which aren't actually connected. I do have another version for another verse which fits more with the structure of the whole song, but I think this is long enough. Yes, I imagine it probably is, David. Don't worry about sending that one in. Love the pod, and this feature always amuses me with the range of songs used. Keep up the good work. As David alluded to, this is a bit of an epic. I kind of enjoyed this. I'd be interested to know your opinion on this, Jack.
I remember Fulham in September. I remember the loss of Bloomfield Road. Then November, 7-0 at Blackburn. Then at the Majeski, scoring goals for fun and do it all again next week. Robinson at left back, Nico on the right, Ream alongside Tosin at the back to keep it tight, Marek Rodak in goal, safe hands between the sticks, Harrison Reed in midfield, Tom Kenny makes us tick.
It's not bad, is it?
It's very good.
Goal scored from Mitro, Fabio Carvalho, Harry Wilson and Cabano. FFC going up, yeah. FFC going up, yeah. Whoa, 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 whoa. FFC going up, yeah. Whoa, 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 whoa.
I mean, it's not catching on.
No. That's just a nice song, isn't it?
Honestly, it was just quite pleasant. I just quite enjoyed myself. It was nice. It was very musical. It was very rhythmic. I had a good time. You know, keep them coming. These are nice.
I didn't. I mean,
it wasn't about the pool.
Yeah, that was one for today with this catch on when I got it sent in. I was like, it's just quite nice, isn't it? It's just quite pleasant listening.
I'm pleased with it. Delicious. Well done.
Like, I feel like, David, if you could somehow learn the acoustic guitar in 2 days and you fancied coming and singing that on stage.
We can have it live,
before the Fulhamish Live, then we'd definitely take you. But thank you very much for that. Lovely end to the podcast today. And that's all we got time for. Just quickly, Jack, what would you like to name the pod?
Okay, I'm going to go with Andrew Towner's Riverside Fulham Peerless, I think. I like it. I like it a lot. It's quite long, but I like it a lot. Is that London Metro's Cream Teas, which was excellent as well. But sorry, at Londinium calling, you've been edged out by Andrew. Riverside Fulham Peerless.
Very, very good. Thank you very much for all your three-word reviews and for getting involved in the show. If you're coming along to the Half Moon on Sunday, we cannot wait to see you there. Things will be getting underway sometime after 6:30. We're aware that it's the Man City Liverpool game at 4:30, which I imagine a lot of people will want to watch. Might not be the case if Fulham are promoted, but if we're not, I imagine a few people want to kind of catch the end of that, at least the second half. So we were thinking of 6:30, allows that game to finish, allows anyone and everyone to hopefully make their way down to the Half Moon. The Half Moon is open, by the way. There is like a separate concert venue where we're going to be doing the Fulhamish Live. So if you haven't got a ticket but just fancy coming along for a drink to the Half Moon, then you're more than welcome, because the pub is open. It's not like the whole pub is shut. It's just a certain section for ticket holders. We cannot wait to see you there. It's going to be a really, really fun event down there. And the podcast from the Fulhamish Live at the Half Moon should be up early Monday by the time that I wake up from my hangover and edit it. So until then, thank you for listening. Have a great weekend. Jack, thanks for being on.
Thank you very much for having me, Sammy, as always.
And see you on Sunday, mate.
Take it easy. See you Sunday.
Can we wait? Oh, we did that in unison.
It was nice.